ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Agande.
Welcome to the ESPN College Football Podcast. It is a Thursday, December 2nd. Plenty of stuff. Joey Galloway is so good. Trust me, he reveals a couple things that made us laugh and also look at him in shock. But before we talk to Joey and we get to our picks, by the way, he is trailing big time for the first time all season. And we empty in the notebook with Adam Rittenberg. Two things I want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Or listen to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And listen to ESPN's newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk, led by Marcus Spears, Swagoo and Kendrick Perkins. New episodes every Tuesday morning. Check them out. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. All right, enjoy Joey when we talk about daytime soap operas, as well as him scrambling for picks and why it's basketball season where he lives. But first, much more on the new coaching changes and also potentially one in the works at Notre Dame. And welcome to Joey Galloway's podcast with Kevin Agande. Glad you could join us, Joey. So there's a lot to talk about, obviously, with the coaching, drama at USC and then LSU. But right now, the conversation this Thursday is surrounding Notre Dame in the opening. And it looks like Marcus Freeman, the 35-year-old defensive coordinator, with growing support from players and recruits in South Bend, that he is working on a potential deal to be the next head coach at Notre Dame. Tommy Reese is going to stay, the 29-year-old offensive coordinator. I want to get your initial thoughts on this concept here, because usually when we see coaches leave, they take their assistants or at least one of their coordinators. And for both of the coordinators to stay in South Bend, and if Notre Dame were to reach an agreement with Marcus Freeman, what are your thoughts about what this transition will be like in South Bend?
What an amazing route for Marcus Freeman. 2 years ago, defensive coordinator at Cincinnati. And honestly, at that stage, I was truly surprised and disappointed that he lasted that long as a defensive coordinator at Cincinnati, that some other school didn't grab him. So finally Notre Dame does, because he is a really good defensive coordinator. Did some things at Cincinnati. If you watch what they do there, their schemes, the things they do, they win with lesser talent because their scheme is so good at times. So then he goes to Notre Dame and there for a year. And then this all happens. I think some people have made some terrific hires. I really like Brian Kelly going to LSU. And now, and I didn't think this was going to happen, I didn't think that Marcus Freeman would get his shot at Notre Dame this soon. He absolutely was going to be a head coach somewhere, and a really good head coach. This is a huge, huge step way up the ladder in a two-year span. And now it's going to be interesting to see if he can continue to win at Notre Dame.
A couple people that I've talked to that are close to the Notre Dame family brought up one specific thing: his relationship with the players. They always pointed it that within a year, he has developed such chemistry in that locker room as well as the recruits. When you hear that, the head coach, I kind of want to get your perspective, because you come from a different generation. The head coach nowadays is kind of the CEO, right? Up to your assistants on, scheming things. But many coaches right now are relationships, culture, recruiting, making sure. We've seen that work with certain coaches. We've seen that work where, you got to be all in tactical as the guy that's doing the game plan. What are your thoughts on this kind of concept here with the relationships as a recruiter?
I think the guys we see, especially nowadays, that are successful are the guys that are all in. If you go to a Alabama practice, Nick Saban is coaching everything down to the holder on the field goals. He's on every aspect of every part of his football team. Ryan Day, same thing. Involved in every aspect. Dabo Sweeney, involved. I think the days of the head coach being the politician guy, it was sort of the sideline guy, sort of the let my assistants do everything guy. I think that's gone away. So I think with recruiting nowadays and the way this works and the way you get these kids to come in and the way you get them to stay is you're selling a head coach that is very knowledgeable, knows what's going on, going to be your leader, going to like make decisions on your team. And I think that's what we have here. It'll be interesting to see, though, can Notre Dame, because Brian Kelly has done more at Notre Dame with less than I've heard anybody give him credit for. I've heard people calling for his head for a long time, but think about how he was able to do what he did. It's been to the playoff, played for national championship. And honestly, and I don't know this because I never tried to get into Notre Dame, but I hear it's really hard to get into, which makes it difficult to recruit. You know, I took my talent somewhere else.
Yeah. One thing that to clear up, we're going to have Adam Rittenberg on later in the podcast. He had a really interesting tweet today saying he got text about Marcus Freeman's age at 35 as a concern for Notre Dame. And then I love Rittenberg bringing receipts. Dabo was 39 when he was promoted. Lincoln Riley was 33 when he was promoted. Ryan Day was 39 when he was promoted. So don't bring up this age thing, you know, where it's convenient in certain times. Now, I think all three of those guys had some question marks of, can you run a big program? And they prove themselves. Let's see how that plays out in running a big program. But if you have the backing of the locker room, that is a humongous step moving forward, regardless of whether you're at Notre Dame or you're at a smaller school. You've got to make sure the people that are with you day in, day out, the players, the recruits, they all believe in what your message is. And it feels like Marcus Freeman has that.
We'll find out. If you win, the locker room is with you.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't win, then the Notre Dame family all of a sudden are not with you. And unfortunately, in today's world, the hot seat is only sitting a year and a half away. Like when a guy gets a job, they literally hang the hot seat 1 year and a half away and people will start warming it up.
Ask Ed Orgeron.
It is crazy how quickly the hot seat comes. And so, hey, look, I think Marcus Freeman is a terrific coach. We're going to find out if he can find success in South Bend.
I do find it interesting, too, when you talk about like you just have 18 months to prove yourself. Also, think about the scenario. If Lincoln Riley wins Bedlam, is he the next USC coach? No, because they're still in the playoff conversation. You're shaking your head, right? Right. If Luke Fickell and Cincinnati is out of the playoff, is he the next Notre Dame coach? Like, Those scenarios are incredible.
Those are two different animals.
Okay.
Luke is 150 years old. He is content in life, wherever he is. He's not the kind of guy that is looking for the next best thing. He is just a guy that would stay where he is, having success or not. Like, if he's not having success, he's the kind of guy that will dig in and fight and get there. He's the kind of guy you want to foxhole with you.
About Fickell, right?
Yeah, talking about Luke Fickell. He'll chew his leg off. He's that kind of guy. Great guy. So it's going to take a lot to make him move. He's not going to jump at a USC or a Florida or an LSU, things that may have some, you know, rumblings in the base. That's not him. So what Lincoln Riley did, as surprising as it is, Kev, is absolutely brilliant. Oklahoma is going to the SEC. Lincoln Riley, how much success has he had when it's time to go against the Alabamas, the Georgia, whatever, when it's playoff time? Not much.
The Georgia game was fantastic in the semifinals a few years ago. Yeah.
But they lost. So here he comes in about to jump into the toughest conference in football. And have to fight that battle with Oklahoma. You're going to have to retool, re-recruit, change everything you've done, especially on the defensive side. Now, there has been a sitting duck, a beautiful, terrific sitting duck out west called the Pac-12. I think you brought this up before when they put up that graphic about how many of the top quarterbacks in the country have come from California. Mm-hmm. How much talent comes from California?
Southern California, too, specifically. Yep.
So if you're Lincoln Riley, and here's your options, Kev, go get in a war every weekend in the SEC, or go to the big shiny duck out there in the Pac-12 and take a bite with the school with the most history. The one that you would think, if you were to think, you to pick a school that you would say, this school could come back and rule the Pac-12, who would that be? It'd be USC. Mm-hmm. Here he comes in, flashy new style, great offense, no putting up points, in a state that produces quarterbacks. Brilliant move by Lincoln Riley.
And we saw it immediately with Malachi Nelson, a five-star from California that was committed to Oklahoma and flipping within 24 hours right to now, USC, right?
That was the best move out of any of these guys, because that one, someone needs to take over the Pac-12.
And when, you know, I brought this up with Boog yesterday, when USC is good, they're not just a Pac-12 team. They're a national brand. Absolutely. Top 10. Right. Regardless, right?
So the only school out there that has that effect.
It shifts everything, and he doesn't. It's the same vibe when Brian Kelly gets to LSU, that 50 to 60 mile radius, 4-star, 5 stars on a, you know, just within 50 yards, right? Yeah. The same thing with USC in any conversation. The question will be, can he change his defense, his defensive perspective? Can you still bring up one good point.
He's going to the Pac-12.
You still got
to
be ready for the playoff, right? You still got to be ready for a playoff, and you have to have some defense.
You do, but you have a better shot of changing
getting there
in the Pac-12. But at the same time, though, if he flips USC to a top 4 school, gets in the playoffs, that's going to be a great job. You know what I mean? Like, and he has time there because he can have quick success because he's in the Pac-12 and nobody rules the Pac-12. He can take over there, have quick success while building something. These other teams like Brian Kelly, Marcus Freeman, they don't have that kind of ramp up time that Lincoln Riley will have, because you can have success in the Pac-12 without being like, you don't have to change a bunch of things to have success out there.
Fair point. Fair. Absolutely. Fair point. I thought it was a home run. I thought both hires were home runs for both of them for different reasons. And now we will see what Oklahoma can do in trying to fill that position. Do you have a suggestion? You shake your head.
That's a scary thing right now, because literally you are sitting there watching your recruits leave. So if you imagine if you're next in line to take that job, and you're sitting there watching all your recruits leave, and you have to come in behind a Lincoln Riley that, you know, with that great offense, great success he's had there, and do it while you have to like try to not just recruit, but keep the current players you have. I mean, that is going to be an uphill battle.
Let's talk about your program and what we saw this past weekend. I do want to go.
Why do you have that little smirk on your face,
Kev? Not at all. Not at all.
No, I ain't smirking. Look at you smiling, Kev.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I can't. Taylor, does that look like a smile to you?
Joey, I'm laughing more on your reaction. I watched the game with Boog, and Boog was all Michigan, man. He wanted the underdog. It was fascinating, though, to see the confidence continued to grow with Michigan on every single drive, right? And I was stunned that Ohio State looked out of character. Like, it was, you know, the unsportsmanlike ripping of the helmet, you know, the second guy gets caught, of course, but it just seemed uncharacteristic. I want to get your thoughts on how it's playing out in Columbus. The quote from Harbaugh afterwards, because you're feeling good emotionally. You want to be humble about it, but at the same time, a lot of stuff's coming out. And then this, not so subtle shot where Harbaugh says, sometimes people who are standing on third base think they hit a triple, but they didn't. How is that playing out in Columbus?
He's not been humble. I mean, he hasn't. And believe me, I don't care about humble. Humble is not one of those things that's high on my list of things that are important. But he's not been humble. Anytime he had a chance, he's taken a shot at somebody or said something. Even in losing, he's done that. So this doesn't surprise me whatsoever. I think it's great for the rivalry. I like it. I will say this, that line that he said, Kev, I know you like I watch The Young and the Restless. Victor Newman said that same line a while back, just so you have some history behind.
Wait a second. You're a daytime soap opera guy?
No, just The Young and the Restless, Kev. No.
If you watch any soap opera in the daytime, you are a daytime soap opera guy.
What if
you're Young and the Restless?
What if you tape it every day and watch it later?
Oh my God, you're not helping yourself. You're not helping your case. Oh my gosh. Wait a second. We need to know a little bit more. How long has this been going on?
So when I was in college, Kev, I blew my knee out. And I was always home right around that noon to 2 o'clock area. Get up, do my rehab, go to class. I'm at home noon. My grandmother used to always watch it. VCR tapes, she had them stacked to the roof with Young and the Restless. Like she's watching game film. You know what I mean? So she used to always watch it. So I'd sort of, look, see, hey, Victor Newman liked that dude. So I'm home. What am I going to watch? Price is Right. What else am I going to do with myself from 12 to 2? So I started watching this stuff. And no, since college, since my, my redshirt freshman year of college, I've been watching The Young and the Restless. So I'm just saying,
That's like three decades, 30 plus years you've been watching Young and Restless.
Hey, look, Kev, I can do math. All I'm saying is Victor Newman said that line first. So get back on track. So here's what's interesting, Kev. Honestly, if Cade McNamara doesn't throw that interception on the second drive, it's going to be a blowout. They were literally about to blow Ohio State out on the second drive of the game. They go, I think it's 12, 13 plays to start the game. And I mean, it was like, boom, 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 boom. Welcome to Michigan. Get a score, get a stop, ball back in the red zone. I think it's about the 20-yard line. Cade McNamara, who doesn't like to throw over the middle. He's not good between the hashes, doesn't feel comfortable doing it. But I love the attitude. Rivalry game. We're up 7. I'm going to let them hang. Tries to gun one in there. Intercepted. Ohio State. Then Ohio State, in the next couple possessions, take a 10-7 lead. And it's one of those moments in the game that if Michigan scores on that drive, now it's 14-0, and it's going to be a rout. Mm-hmm. Ohio State gets interception. Then they take a 10-7 lead, and it's starting to feel like, okay, now this thing – now Ohio State's here. Here we go.
We're settling in, yes.
Now we're settling in. Here we go. Michigan, and we haven't seen this, Kev. This is why everyone is like, what are we watching? Because we haven't seen this Michigan team where it is like, we're down playing a top five team. We don't care. Let's go. We got a game plan. We believe in it. And not only do we believe in it, we think we're tougher than you. We think we're more physical than you. We're about to run this at you.
Did that surprise you?
And they literally ran it at them. And it was like, they threw a couple of like things in there, here and there, but it wasn't like when they played Oregon got a lot of moving parts and things going on and you jump out of position and they got you. This Michigan thing was, we're going to run it at you. Here we come. We're going to put two tight ends in the backfield and a tailback. Are you guys ready? Because here we come. Smash.
Did that surprise you, though, when this was playing out? That
happened to Ohio State, and we haven't seen Michigan do it. So two things that we haven't seen happening were happening in that game. Very surprised and very impressed. Very impressed with what Michigan did.
How's the playing, though, in Columbus, this whole thing? Are people ticked off? Are people still kind of stunned?
Here's how it's playing. Ohio State just knocked off the number one basketball team in the country in Duke, Blue Devils, Tuesday night.
Saw it. Yep.
That's all we care about. Move on, Kev.
No, you can't just move on. Are you kidding me?
Hey, Kev. It's basketball season.
No, man. Joey, don't do that. You can't say it's just you just slide to basketball season. I don't believe that.
If you knock off the number one team in the country on your home court, I'm telling you, hey, Kev, I kid you not. I'm not joking, Kev. I'm not joking. You wouldn't believe how many people are like, oh, that makes us feel a little better. Like, it's like, we're looking for something, Kev. Hey, look, our women's team just lost in the ACC Challenge. Hey, look, we'll take beating the number one team in the country, and we moved on, Kev.
Wow.
The season's over.
Wow. Hey, look. It's,
hey, look, Kev. If
Taylor, did you hear this? It is December 2nd, and Joey Galloway's telling me it's basketball season in Columbus. I'm not number one. I mean, I'm not sure what surprises me more, that you still watch Young and the Restless or that you think it's basketball season right now.
We knocked off number one in the country, Kev.
You are the king of deflecting. You are such that you move literally.
I'm telling you what Columbus is doing, Kev.
You absorb nothing. You literally reflect everything.
I'm telling you what Columbus is doing. Columbus has moved on to basketball season.
I don't believe it. All right. Let's continue to move on. You know, I want to move on to my favorite segment, I think, in the era of this podcast with me and Joey. Because it's time to look at our picks.
Joey and Kevin's Weekly Locks.
And this celebratory moment is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win. Speaking of win, Joey is suddenly with a lead of 4-5 during the season. After this past weekend, is trailing by 3 games. I mean, you want to talk about, is it basketball season when it comes to your picks? You want to talk about a collapse in the final week of the regular season? You went 1-7, buddy. 1-7.
What kind of idiot takes Nebraska? No, seriously. It would take a complete idiot to take Nebraska. And the funny part is, Kev, not was I just stupid enough to take them. I was also stupid enough that when they're, I think, 21-9, I was stupid enough to almost send you and Boog a text.
Oh.
I was about to just shoot off a text when the punt got blocked. I dropped my phone. I was like, here it is. Here it is. Nebraska trying to take me down.
Yep.
I was like.
Serves you right.
And then the LSU garbage at the end. Seriously. I was like, man, this right here is just.
Hey, let's just continue too. And the Penn State and the Oregon State. You took some L's here. We both lost on Florida State and Ohio State, but I finished 4-4. You, my man, go 1-7. 1-7, as you are now 3 back. And let's get to our picks.
But just look at what happened. Nebraska up 21-9. LSU has to go on a last second drive. And Penn State's in a blizzard.
That's I don't want to hear the justification.
Let's go.
That's just justification.
Those three things never happen. What we got?
All right. Pac-12 championship, Friday night, Oregon, Utah. Utah laying 3 in Vegas. Let's not forget. Utah just a couple weeks ago in Salt Lake City won 38-7, and they ran for over 200 yards against Oregon's defense. Who you got?
I'll take Utah. And I think Oregon's a better team than what they showed against Utah. But when you get smacked in the mouth, those are hard to come back from. I'm going to stick with Utah.
I'm going to take Oregon and the points. Like, okay, let's go to the Big 12 title game. Baylor, Oklahoma State, another rematch, this one in Arlington. Oklahoma State won 24-14 earlier in the season. Oklahoma State laying the 5.5 coming off that emotional win against Oklahoma. A lot of questions about Gary Bohannon's health. The Bears run defense really, really good. I am going with Oklahoma State laying the points 5.5.
I'm going Oklahoma State too. Partly because selfishly, I'd like to see some drama on Sunday.
Yes.
I would like to see if Oklahoma State wins and Cincinnati wins and Alabama wins and Michigan wins. I want to see what the committee does.
You want carnage. Yes. And Cincinnati will be part. I'll tell you what, though, if Alabama wins and Oklahoma State wins, Cincinnati, they better win by 2 scores. They are going to be very nervous with Oklahoma State's resume.
I agree with that. Resume wise, Oklahoma State gets scary for Cincinnati.
Okay. Let's go to the SEC. Georgia, Alabama, and Atlanta. First time Bama's a dog in 92 games. Bama leads, leads the SEC in sacks. Georgia leads the country in total defense. Number two against pass defense. Who you got?
I got Georgia.
The line 6.5, just making sure.
The line could be 16.5.
Wow.
The offensive line of Alabama is scary. I'm telling you, Kev, there were times in that Auburn game where they were blocking like it was a screen pass. Guys were coming through so fast. I like Georgia.
Really weird to see, right? It's just
crazy.
Not what we're used to, but that happens with the attrition, of course, that we've seen through the years of draft picks, top picks going nonstop. I want to see how Stetson Bennett handles some pressure. That's the key in a game like this. But the line is 6.5. I think there's going to be a lot of emotion. I'm going with Georgia.
Whatever. So,
we're both on that. All right, American, Houston, Cincinnati. This one at Nippert, which I love. I love championship games on the home field. I love the environment.
I see what you're trying to do here, Kev.
Cincinnati laying at 10.5.
You got a lead right now, so you're just trying to match my picks.
No, what do you mean? We were different with Oregon, Utah. So
that one.
Out the gate, I will start. I'm taking Houston and the 10.5.
Ah. Really? Daggone it, Kevin. I like Houston in the 10.5, too.
I love it.
Hey, but as much as I like that, I mean, the only way I can come back is if I go the other way.
Yeah, buddy.
So I got to go the other way.
Okay.
I like the Houston in the 10. I really like that
one. Yeah, you better keep convincing yourself.
I like it a lot.
So you're laying the 10.5 in Cincinnati?
I have to, Kev. Down.
I love that. I love panic Joey, scrambling Joey. Let's go to the Big Ten here, which is another scenario where Michigan's coming off that emotional win against Ohio State. They're laying 10.5 against Iowa and Indy in the Big Ten championship game. Who you got?
Michigan.
10.5. You got Michigan laying the 10.5.
Take the 10.5, Kev.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? And you talk about the offense. This is all about the three running backs, Blake Corum, Hassan Haskins, and Tyler Goodson.
One of the best defenses in the country at creating turnovers.
I've got Michigan. Thank you, Joey, for playing. All right, let's go. ACC championship game. Pitt laying the 3 against Wake Forest. This one in Charlotte. The over-under is 72.5. By the way, the Michigan-Iowa game over-under is 43.5. Just a humongous difference. I told Boog yesterday, I'm surprised Pitt-Wake Forest is at 72. If it was at 80, I would feel most comfortable. I'm taking Pitt laying the points. Kenny Pickett, 40 touchdowns. Sam Hartman, 34. Jordan Addison, phenomenal wide receiver at Pitt. 17 touchdowns, 85 catches. You're shaking your head because I think you want Pitt laying the points as well.
Kev, I see what you're doing here. I see what you're doing. It's sad. It's very sad to see the Philadelphia Phillies just playing keep away right now.
What do you mean? I'm taking a pick. I don't even know who you're going with.
What do you mean? I'll take Kenny Pickett and the over. I'm going with the over on this game.
Yeah, there's no doubt. 72.5. I'm feeling good about the over in that one. All right, buddy. Cannot wait. You look at me with that look. By the way, we're only different on two picks, so there's no way you could take the lead. You may have to try to get desperate here during bowl season.
We start going to NBA games next week.
you've turned the page on basketball and everything.
Yeah, it's basketball season here in Columbus. Let's go NBA picks.
Joey, be good, man. I'll talk to you.
Yep.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
A lot of news off the field this week, and we still have football in front of us with championship weekend. Great to have Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, college football insider with us. Adam, I'm sure that you are constantly charging your phone with the text, giving us a little Schefter, because honestly, the stunning news with Lincoln Riley would be the biggest story all week. Then the next day it's Brian Kelly. Now it's Notre Dame situation and potentially filling that job. What more are you hearing right now surrounding Marcus Freeman maybe getting this job?
Yeah, Kevin, I think all signs are pointing towards Marcus Freeman being the next Notre Dame head coach. There's some steps that need to still happen because it's Notre Dame and there's, you know, committees and offers and the actual finalization. But I'd be pretty surprised at this point if it's somebody other than Marcus Freeman. And really, it's been leading to this point. If you've been reading between the lines, you athletic director Jack Swarbrick on Tuesday in addressing Brian Kelly's departure, you know, talked about how different this search is going to be versus when he went out to get Brian Kelly 12 years ago, and the stability of the program and how healthy the program is, almost indicating that, you know, they don't need a shakeup there. And then there was some news later on Tuesday that Matt Bayless, the head strength coach and performance coach, was going to stay at Notre Dame. Then, not surprisingly, Brian Kelly is trying to hire Marcus Freeman and Tommy Rees, the two coordinators, to come with him to Notre Dame, to LSU rather. Jack Swarbrick skips the playoff meeting, or at least stays back in South Bend to try to retain both Marcus Freeman and Tommy Rees. And then Tommy Rees, we know for sure, is back. He announced that to the team. If you haven't seen the video of Tommy's speech, it's Tebow-like. It is going to go down in Notre Dame history. There's some profanity, maybe not like Tebow, but it was an awesome moment for him to announce that he was coming back. And so, again, everything is pointing towards Marcus Freeman then, not just being retained as defensive coordinator, but as the head coach. And it makes sense because, you know, you already have your offensive coordinator in place. You have your strength coach in place. You have your recruiting momentum. It's going to be hard for anybody on the outside to come in and just accept all of that. So I think Notre Dame in this case believes that it has the right guy, even though he hasn't been a head coach, even though he's only been at Notre Dame, Kevin, for 1 year. A year ago, he was still Cincinnati's defensive coordinator. But that's the type of impression and how dynamic this personality and this particular coach is. And that's Marcus. I covered him as a player, covered him as a young assistant. He's a unique, special guy. And I think Notre Dame has been able to see that in very short order.
Now, when you describe this relationship that he has, you know, with the players and recruits, I've heard the same exact thing, that within a year that was all built in. And you know, recruiting plays such a big role these days with the transfer portal, now more than ever, right? What does it say to retain both the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator? Because usually when you see a big name coach leave to another program, he takes his assistants. He at least takes one coordinator. Maybe the other coordinator gets promoted. What's it say about what Notre Dame has right now and the relationships that Freeman has with the players internally and Rees has internally with the players?
Yeah, I think it shows just the connection that both men have to this particular program. I mean, Tommy Rees isn't just your mercenary coordinator who's bounced around. He was a former Notre Dame quarterback, lifelong Notre Dame fan. He's from the Chicago area. And so it would almost be surprising if he were to leave Notre Dame for LSU, given his connections there and their desire to keep him. And they did step up financially to keep him on Wednesday. And then Marcus Freeman, remember, you know, this is the irony of all this. LSU offered him the defensive coordinator job a year ago. He chose not to go with Ed Orgeron. He chose to go work for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. And if you look at Marcus's career, he grew up near Dayton in Ohio. He played at Ohio State, and he spent his entire coaching career in two states, Ohio and Indiana. He was at Purdue with Daryl Hazel. He was with Hazel at Kent State. And so he's not really an SEC guy. And so even though, you know, there's tremendous financial opportunities at LSU, I don't see how that advances his career at all. Obviously, if he's getting Notre Dame head coaching job, that's another conversation. But I do think that these two young guys have made incredible relationships there. And, you know, Marcus Freeman, again, was hired, I think, in January of 2021 and really made an immediate impact in recruiting. And that's still the question at Notre Dame. As you know, they've been an incredibly consistent program. They've gotten to the college football playoff, but on those biggest stages, they have not had the personnel to beat Clemson or to beat Alabama and those caliber teams. You know, Marcus, I think, gives them the chance to upgrade their recruiting in certain ways that they'll have a better opportunity to win a national championship, which Brian Kelly, I always respected this about Brian, said that is the only goal that matters at Notre Dame. And there's now this big question, him leaving Notre Dame for LSU, it was an indictment of maybe his belief that Notre Dame could ever win one. Why are you leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU? And so I think Marcus Freeman gives them the best chance to build a roster that's championship caliber. Will he be as effective as Brian Kelly in games? Will he be as effective as a leader and a CEO? That's very much a question mark. But I think this does make a lot of sense, even though Notre Dame, as you know, has not had the best history with first-time head coaches. You know, obviously, Charlie Weiss had some early history success, went downhill there. Bob Davey didn't go well. So he is fighting a little bit of history in that sense, but I also think he's his own guy and has a great opportunity to help Notre Dame take that next step as a program.
Just a year ago, Freeman was the DC at Cincinnati, and there is that pipeline here because Kelly used to be the head coach at Cincinnati. A lot of people are pointing to the current head coach at Cincinnati, Luke Fickell, as the guy that would have been the man to fill the spot when Brian Kelly left. How much do you think Cincinnati, still in the playoff hunt, played a role in this? Because I brought this up with Joey and specifically yesterday with Booger, if Cincinnati's not in the playoff conversation, does Luke Fickell get the job? If Oklahoma is still in the playoff conversation and they win at Bedlam, is Lincoln Riley the head coach at Oklahoma today, or is he the head coach at USC? Like, how much did these games and these playoff conversations play a role? Didn't play a role here for Brian Kelly. And that is a completely different topic. And that's why people are pretty upset about it, the timing of it. But those two specific scenarios, Oklahoma losing its head coach, Cincinnati right now still having Luke Fickell.
Yeah, I'll start with Oklahoma. I mean, certainly Lincoln Riley is still the Sooners head coach as we're talking right now. There is no way that if they win Bedlam and they advance to the Big 12 championship game with a chance to continue that streak of Big 12 championships, is he leaving for USC? And I spoke with sources at USC that in a sense, were rooting for Oklahoma State because that gave them their window. That gave them their chance to go in and make the pitch that they did, which was phenomenal, that was able to get Lincoln to leave a great situation for what he hopes is a even better situation with the Trojans. So timing is everything. And I absolutely think if they win that Bedlam game, maybe it still happens, but it's certainly less likely than if they lost and it opened that opportunity for USC to come in and make that pitch. As far as Notre Dame goes, in Fickell, I really think he's probably the Notre Dame coach if he wasn't in the playoff conversation. I think there's only a few jobs that he would leave Cincinnati for. I think Ohio State certainly won, given his connections to Columbus and the Buckeye program as a former player and assistant. I think Notre Dame is maybe the other or one of the few others. He and his wife Amy are devout Catholics. I think they love Notre Dame. You know, seeing them on the field after the Cincinnati Notre Dame game this year, you could have easily imagined them on the other sideline. So again, the timing, and again, Luke is not the type of guy that would have left a playoff team, I just don't think to take another job. So I can understand that Notre Dame, some people are like, well, why don't we just wait a little longer, see what happens over the weekend? Maybe they lose to Houston. Maybe they don't get in the playoff, even if they win, and then sort of assess it there. And Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, I asked him that question on Tuesday without naming Luke Fickell's name. Are you willing to wait for a guy who's in a big postseason game? And he said yes. But I do think this momentum with Freeman and the idea that if they didn't promote him, they might lose him and maybe never get him back. That was something that was a concern to a lot of people around that program. And again, that's why it's heading in that direction for sure, that he would be the next coach.
Yeah, timing's huge, especially I think that everything has changed with this December early signing period. That because you could wait if February was still the date, right, that everybody was targeting, that first week of February is the signing period, then you still have some time to line things up. But you've got to hit the road immediately within 2 weeks before that signing period ends in December. And if you don't get a class that you like, you could be a year back. And I think that plays a huge role, which then leads us to the next conversation, Oklahoma. And there's one guy who knows enough about Oklahoma, and he's in their conference right now, and he's been a hot name in the past. What are you hearing about Matt Campbell in Oklahoma or anybody else at Oklahoma?
Right. So I've heard different things about Matt Campbell. And again, he's another guy, Kevin, that probably would have preferred Notre Dame versus Oklahoma if given both options. And again, it seems like Notre Dame, that door is closing or almost completely closed. So what does he think of Oklahoma? It's in the conference, which I think is less than ideal given what he did at Iowa State. I still think Matt's, ideal dream jobs are Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, perhaps in that area, maybe Penn State. So I think he's a guy that may have a decision to make. Cause I was hearing a little bit on Wednesday that no, it's not going to be Oklahoma for him. And he likes what Iowa State's building. You know, now that Notre Dame is seemingly off the table, does he reconsider that? And what's Oklahoma's interest in him? What's their level of trying to bring him in as the next head coach? So I think he's definitely a name there to watch until they make a hire. I also think Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator, you know, again, an Oklahoma assistant coach from 1999 to 2011, did a really good job there, but then became this superstar assistant, so to speak, at Clemson. Once he went to Clemson, you know, he took his profile to another level, you know, becoming a two-time national championship winning defensive coordinator and the highest paid defensive coordinator. You can go on and on and on. So I think he's an interesting name for them. And then I'm just trying to think who else might fit there. I mean, those two jump out. Obviously, Mark Stoops, you know, re-signing with Kentucky, it's not going to be him. And I do think there's some urgency, but I also understand Joe Castiglione, the athletic director, taking his time, because is it worth rushing a hire to save what's kind of a quickly falling apart recruiting class, mm-hmm. or is it more important just to get the hire right? And so it probably is in the long run to get the hire right, but their roster situation versus Notre Dame's, which hasn't had this mass exodus of commits and people in the transfer portal, it's kind of a different situation. So I understand the urgency. I certainly understand the angst among Oklahoma fans to stop the bleeding, so to speak.
It is that domino effect, because you know, when those moves are made at USC and LSU, you don't just sit there and say, yeah, everything's done. No, now you have openings at Notre Dame and Oklahoma, right? And then whoever gets the Oklahoma job, then you have an opening wherever, you know, that happens. Potentially it could be Clemson looking for a defensive coordinator, or Iowa State looking for a head coach. And Venables, it's an interesting, he has a relationship with the AD at Oklahoma, as you mentioned, with his time there. Venables has passed on several opportunities too. He likes where he lives. And that's the one thing that has always impressed me about Dabo and his staff. It is the complete opposite of what Nick Saban goes through, right? Where you're churning assistants and it's just basically in the pipeline. They keep on going in and out. Clemson's ability to retain high assistants and top assistants has been a huge story when it comes to stability for Dabo and what he's established there. So it'll be interesting to see if Venables does take the job or if he's interested in that job at Oklahoma. All right. Another topic this week. Let's just add to it. What more can you tell us about expansion? Conversations were last night in that committee room in Grapevine. You're shaking your head because they have met so many times and we still don't have any real progress to report. Where are we going here with expansion?
Yeah, I was joking yesterday on Twitter, Kevin, that I think it's my least favorite assignment is covering college football playoff meetings. And thankfully, Heather Dinich kind of takes that off my plate, because it isn't fun, especially this year, because it seemed like we were close to an expanded playoff. I had my issues with it, but I still wanted to see something happen. And we're sitting here in early December, still with no, you know, firm plan going forward. You know, it just seems to the sticking point at this stage, it appears to be the automatic qualifier element, that you know, some of the commissioners really want it. I know some of the others, especially Greg Sankey, you know, don't want to have that part of the plan. The plan was obviously to have the top six rated conference champions instead of having an automatic qualifier, which would, you know, secure a spot for every Power Five conference. And then, you know, the highest rated group of five, I guess. So I think that seems to be the issue. I'm hopeful that around the national title game that we'll get a resolution, but I really thought we'd have it by now. I really thought this meeting would be the one to get it over the line. And, you know, again, you have different commissioners in that room. You have people who were obviously part of the committee that went out and came up with this 12-team proposal. You also have really new commissioners. George Kliavkov only named in the spring. Kevin Warren only last year. Jim Phillips only named last year and only started earlier this year. So you have the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12, all relatively new commissioners who might just want to see this through a little bit further before they make a decision. But I do think the likelihood of an expanded playoff in the relatively near future is is pretty slim. I think we're stuck with four at least for the next 3 years. Maybe we'll see an expansion after that, but it's just been a very slow and I know frustrating process for a lot of people.
You mentioned 3 years. That's where the contract runs out too, through 2024, right? Like that's
25.
That's
kind of 25 is the last one. Yeah.
So 2025. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, this is great. Appreciate it. Especially with news breaking constantly, looking forward to checking. I will continue to refresh your Twitter feed as we will wait and see if Notre Dame makes a decision or makes an announcement over the next 24 hours, 48 hours, potentially on a new head coach, potentially. And that is Marcus Freeman. Adam, be good, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Adam Rittenberg. Always great to have his insight and information, especially in a week like this. Of course, to Joey Galloway. Love to see the panic. I wish sometimes you guys could see these Zooms and his facial reactions to all the things we talk about. It's so good. So much panic at the same time, nervous energy from him. Before we go, you should know that ESPN Radio has three games on the air this weekend. Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern for the Pac-12 championship game. Then Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern, you'll get full coverage of the Big 12 championship game. And then later at 7 p.m. Eastern, tune in for the ACC championship game, all on ESPN Radio. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back on Sunday. Paul Feinbaum and Matt Berry, those guys will be recapping championship Saturday and giving their first thoughts on the four teams in the college football playoff. Don't miss it. Shout out to our guy, Taylor Schwenk, our fantastic producer, always making sure this show can be brought to you, the listener. Enjoy the weekend.